The US government recently introduced an updated policy guidance around access to academic papers, which would see embargoes lifted on taxpayer-funded research papers following 12 months. This will have a significant impact for both in the US and around the world for accessibility to a wide range of peer-reviewed publications. So, how did this decision come about, and what impact could it have on research? We're joined now by Virginia Barber, Director of Open Access Australasia from Queensland University of Technology, to discuss further. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. So how did this shift come about?
Well, the US government actually has been a leader in access to research. And back in 2013, under President Obama, there was a directive which said that research papers had to be made freely available after 12 months. When President Biden was then vice president, he was very much focused on cancer research, and he talked about the need to make that research immediately available. And so this now is an extension really of that, and it's now directing that not just the research, all the research that's funded by all federal agencies in the US has to be made immediately available, and not just that, but also the data behind that research. So this is a really big change. It will come into effect at the beginning of 2026.
And so why do you see this as such a significant move from the US government?
Well, the US government is obviously a huge funder of research. So, you know, more than $85 billion goes into funding US federal research. They produce more than 2 million papers per year. And so there's a huge number of papers that this will affect. And, you know, like as is often the case, what happens in the US has ramifications globally. So, for example, this actually also affects the all of the authors of those papers. So, for example, if you're going to be an Australian researcher, the research that you're on with your American co-authors will also be made immediately available. And it also builds on a lot of work that's been going on in Europe. So there's an organisation called Coalition S, which has had a very similar policy in place since the beginning of 2021. So, and that's also a large amount of research funded there, so about 33 billion euros. So we're now seeing, you know, two very big blocks of funders insisting that their research is made immediately openly available.
And so just to give context for people who maybe haven't tried to access academic papers in a long time or at all, how prohibitive can it be to access academic papers?
It's a huge problem. So if you're sitting in a well-funded institution, such as the one that I sit in at QUT, you know, you have access to a large number of papers, but not all the papers. So not every university can afford to subscribe to every paper. So there are papers that I can't still read. And, you know, the universities across Australia pay more than $200 million a year for access to that research. So it's not free, it has to be paid for. If you're outside a university, you know, if you've got something that you want to look at, particularly say you're a patient, or even for example, if you work in an area of policy and government, if you want to access a publication, you have to pay for it. You'll come up against what's called a paywall, and that can be an individual paywall. So you might have to pay sort of $30 or $50 just to access one paper, and you may not even be able to access it, you know, long term. If you want to get a subscription to a journal, then you're usually talking, you know, hundreds of dollars. So it's a massive problem across globally. And of course, if you're in a sitting in a country where there's very little money for subscriptions, then you may have an entire country, including the scientists, you really can't access to research.
And how is it that academic papers have had this system built around them that it has become so prohibitive to access them?
Yeah, I mean, the issue is that it's basically built on a system of print-based publishing. So, you know, back when academic publishing first came into, you know, existence in the sort of 1600s, it was actually pretty efficient to, you know, print a research, print the paper and distribute it through a subscription model. And over that period of time, you know, since then, what we've seen is a large number of publishers who've come into the marketplace, but the real problem is that it's dominated by quite a small number. So they have large market power. So essentially, the system right now is that all academics submit a paper to a journal. It's peer reviewed, so it goes through a process of quality control at the journal. The journal will then publish it, and then will essentially sell that publication back to the institution. So you can have a situation where an academic can publish a paper And even the institution that academic works for may still have to pay to access it. So it's a system that's really very outdated because, of course, nowadays everything's published online. So we have a system that really sort of dates from the time when paper was a process for distributing research, and it is no longer fit for purpose.
We're speaking with Virginia Barber from Queensland University of Technology about accessibility to research papers in the US. And so, as you mentioned, this is something that is set to come into effect in 2026 in the US. So what are the complexities around changing this system?
Well, this comes on the back of work that's been going on really for more than 20 years. So right back in the early 2000s, there was a statement which really outlined a sort of the plan for potential for open access. It was called the Budapest Open Access Initiative. And, you know, since then, a number of publishers who really started as fully open access. So I used to work for a publisher called the Public Library of Science, which was an innovator in this area. So this isn't really a new thing. There's been an incremental work over the past 20 years, but the real challenge has been getting governments to say that they absolutely want this to happen as a sort of big policy statement. So this is why it's so important that the US has come out with this statement, because it is really now saying that it's going to be global across the US. And what we need to see really is publishers saying, well, okay, how are we going to design our system so that we can make this happen? So it will certainly require some shifting of funds. So it may well be what we'd like to see, for example, is funding for journals so that it's not only can people access them but for free, but also the researchers can publish there for free. That's very important. So we don't want to exclude people from publishing because of this. So it will require re-engineering. But, you know, there's a lot of work going on in this space, and it's something that publishers really need to be thinking about very hard.
And what do you see as the broader benefits for more access to academic papers worldwide?
Well, I mean, the key thing that this memorandum, which is how it was announced, was talked about, is the COVID-19 pandemic. It was absolutely clear during that the massive acceleration that we saw in scientific advances, including the development of the vaccine and all of the other initiatives around treating COVID, came because research was made free and publicly available. But that only came because, the White House, at that time the Trump White House, linked up with scientific agencies globally to call for all that research to be made freely available. It didn't happen. The publishers didn't offer it up by default, and some of that research has now gone back behind a paywall, so it wasn't made freely available forever. So COVID is a great example. We've now got another emerging threat potentially of monkeypox, and again, the White House had to put out a call to ask for all that research to be made open. And then, you know, just thinking about climate change and all the other challenges that we're facing, it's really clear that making the research immediately available to everybody, not just individual academics in specific institutions, really accelerates research. And, you know, it's also important for individuals who want to read, say, about the treatment of a disease they have. They need to be able to access the research.
And so you mentioned we're seeing obviously significant steps forward in the US, also the Europe, across Europe, this is being addressed. Could we see changes like this happen here in Australia?
Yeah, so there's a fair bit of work going on. So as well as the sort of kind of the advocacy group, such as the one that I work for, that are looking at the options in this space. The chief scientist, Dr. Kathy Foley, when she started last year, she indicated that open access was one of her priorities. The two public funders in Australia, the National Health and Medical Research Council and the Australian Research Council, both have open access policies, although at the moment those both, they're not for immediate open access. It's embargo. The research doesn't have to be made available until 12 months. But the NHMRC consulted on a policy last year. Institutions, if you go to any of your any universities, they have what are called repositories of the research that they fund, and that can be made. Some of that's fully publicly available, but that's sort of dependent on, again, the publisher policy. So there's a fair bit of work going on in this space, and this move is being looked at very closely.
Well, I very much appreciate your time this morning, Virginia. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for having me on.